Hello, friends, and welcome to the Optimized Advisor Podcast, where we focus on optimizing the well-being and best practices of insurance and financial professionals today. On this show, our objective is to help you optimize your life, optimize your profession, and learn from other Optimized Advisors. I'm your host, Scott Heinola. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello, friends. This is Scott Heinola, host of the podcast, Optimized Advisor. Thank you all for tuning in today. Today, we have a fellow Optimized Advisor in studio. Say hello to everybody, my
friend. Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
It's awesome to have you here. Thank you for appeasing my request, my
good
friend.
It's good to see your beautiful face,
Scott. Always. The feeling is mutual. Anywho, moving on to a more serious topic. For those of you who don't know, Jeff Velez is one of my bestest of friends in life. We met professionally through another kind of associate of ours, and it was one of the best introductions that I've ever had in my professional career. So
cheers to that.
Seriously, thanks for coming in, talking a little bit more about yourself, your practice, what makes you tick, and maybe we can share some of your insights with our listeners today.
Absolutely. It's an honor to be here. Greatly appreciate it.
So let me give you a little introduction, give some perspective to the listeners here about your business, your practice. You have over 18 years in the insurance and financial services industry. Started out with mortgage loans, real estate. You are a licensed real estate agent, correct?
That is correct.
Yep. Equipment financing, retirement planning. You've always had a passion for safe accumulation strategies, working with pre-retirees and retirees, and certainly with an emphasis in investments and retirement income planning. In 2006, Jeff and his partner at the time founded Shoreline Financial Services as a vision of a full-service financial agency with the goal of using expertise to help people plan for financial growth and security. You are a proud member of the National Ethics Association. We can talk a little bit more about that, and Better Business Bureau. You reside in the wonderful community of Ladera Ranch, and you have a beautiful wife, much better half than you, and two beautiful, growing, dynamic children who I know near and dearly, daughter Madison and son Weston. You are definitely active in the sport community as an intentional father. I mean that. I admire you in many ways from that sorts, and we can maybe talk a little bit about that as well. So kudos to you for having a well-balanced life.
Wow, that was, I feel on.
Yeah, should
we? Spectacular.
Should I put that on your website?
Absolutely, word for word. Yeah, I mean, with the kids, you know, they call you Uncle Scott. They call the kids cousins. So we've definitely have our family dynamic.
Mm-hmm. We do.
That we all love.
We've shared some good times. Let's talk a little bit about the business side first before we get into pleasure, which we can certainly do. I know that before you partnered with Shoreline, I mean, just give us a background on kind of your journey of what led you into the, you know, the annuity and insurance space in particular, which you definitely have you've carved a very successful and unique path in that space that isn't traditional in terms of, you know, annuity planners or annuity advisors across this country. And we'd love to learn more about that, you know. So Shoreline Financial, founded in 2006. How and why did that happen?
Well, I think one thing that kind of brought us together is our work ethic and dynamic over the years. I know as a youth for yourself, what was one of your first jobs? Construction. Mm-hmm. Right. I think as a young man, I think a lot of us get into that because it's something that is, we're working with our hands, we're using our minds, we're using our bodies, and we just love the overall aspect of getting the foot in the door in one way or another. Right out of high school, got into construction, got into working with my stepdad in equipment financing.
How long did you do construction?
I think I started when I was about 14, did it on and off through high school.
Okay.
Summer jobs here and there, maybe spring break. Also worked at a pizza place, making pizzas, delivering pizzas. Yeah. That's how I met the future ex-business partner.
Right.
So knowing each other for a long time.
But in high school, right? You knew each
high
other.
High school, yeah, 14.
Yeah,
14, great. So.
Yeah, the one thing longevity. That construction, I mean, I learned a lot from being in construction. Certainly work ethic was probably number one. I mean, you are grinding it out. It is physically and mentally challenging from 6:30 to 2:30. You know, that's your set work time. But I quickly learned that I had a bigger purpose and calling, you know, in life and Absolutely. Things that I wanted to accomplish that just weren't a part of construction. But it was such a wonderful, I look back on it now as like it was a gift and opportunity to have that privilege to do that. Because it provided me a number of things in the future that I think put us where we are today.
Absolutely. You know? And at 14, what is my thing about being on time?
Oh, gosh.
I learned this when I was 14 years old, and it still sticks.
When you're I try to not remember it.
When you're early, you're on time. When you're on time, you're late.
Yeah.
When you're late, it's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. That's true. That's good insight.
You've heard me say that a million times. My kids have heard me say that.
Well, you always bust my chaps.
Usually I say when you're late, you're Scott.
Right.
in a joking manner. So, it's just learning that from 14 and using that as my work ethic from day one and getting into, like you said, a bigger purpose out of construction. It's something I want to expand my horizons. I want to understand what is out there for me and in the future. And it's a good, good starting point, I think, for any young individual that wants to get their feet wet. But going in from high school into the pizzas, it's like, okay, I want to get better for myself.
Yeah, that is, you're making some cash. You're making some tips, you know?
I mean, 16, 17 years old,
yeah.
Junior and senior in high school, making 150, 250 bucks a night on a Friday and Saturday. I mean, that's putting money in your pocket.
Heck yeah.
That was good times back in the day.
But
that's not the future.
Right.
You know, unless you're owning the pizza place, that might be a different story.
Right.
You know me. I've never been a big school individual. I think you either have it or you don't. You either love studying for tests or you love doing the work.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. At a high school, maybe went to Saddleback for a few months. But my stepdad owned a equipment financing company. So he just said, look, if you're not going to go to college, you're going to come work for me. You're going to make phone calls. You're going to dial. And picking up the phone at 18, 19 years old and making 200, 300 phone calls a day. I mean, it's a grind.
Yeah.
And getting rejected after rejection after rejection after rejection after it gets old. But for me now, give me any random number. I would love to pick up the phone and call. And I could strike up a conversation just because that's what I had to do.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I did that for 2 or 3 years and realized, okay, working with family is a little bit of a chore. It's not something that I don't think I can do for the rest of my life. Went back into construction for a little bit. I don't know how in depth you want to go.
No.
So worked at a place.
You dabbled with construction for a little bit again.
Right. Yeah. So at the end of the day, I was in a serious relationship. I was 20, 21 years old. An opportunity came up to get into mortgage lending. If you remember back in the 2001-2003 era, LendingTree was the lead generated source to get your mortgage lending leads.
Yeah, it was the cat's meow.
It was fantastic.
Oh, man.
I started there, did the training, got to the point where I was the one closing the deals. And we would come in on a Monday, not even sending anything out to the potential client on LendingTree and have an e-fax with 4, 5, 6, up to 10 full submissions. So we're just taking that and funneling it through. And at 21, 22, 23 years old, making 10, 15, 20,000 in 1 month, I remember that because I remember looking at my check going, what the heck do I do with this?
Right.
This is absolutely amazing.
It's like Wolf of Wall Street stuff.
It was definitely a learning experience. I mean, it was, like you say, Wolf of Wall Street. It was every Friday, people are bringing in coolers of beer.
Yeah.
You know, you're working from 10 to noon and then you're leaving. So that It was Man,
what a crazy reality, you know.
I
would love to get back to sales like that, no question.
Yeah. Now in your
but that's so transactional.
It is. But what the funny thing is that you look at it now, we were selling mortgage rates 6.5, 7, even 8.25 And people were they thought we were the golden gods.
Right.
You know, a lot of people back then were doing subprime, so they're paying off their credit card, they're paying off cars, you know, they're consolidating their debt, and they're still saving thousands
all
of dollars.
All stated income.
No income, no assets. Those were the interesting ones.
Yeah.
Interesting ones.
So I'm sensing a track record here of sales.
Sales.
You've been good in sales, and your personality certainly lends to that. What did you learn from those 200 to 300 dials a day? You know, how did you get through that? What did you tell yourself? What did you, I mean, you know, that's a challenge. I mean, first of all, that takes a certain individual to be able to day in and day out, stick to that process and still keep their sanity, you know?
It was a grind. And what I look at it now is that first pick up the phone, the first phone call you're dialing, what is going through your mind? Rejection, fear, right? It's taking the fear and not making it a physical, I don't want to say physical disability, but you know, if you have the fear in your mind, you're going to fail. Get that fear out of your mind and turn it into a positive.
Yep.
If you can pick up the phone and get rejected and then pick up the phone and get rejected again, by the time you're making the 10th, 15th call, it doesn't even matter anymore. It just boom, boom, boom. And that's
that much closer to a yes.
Absolutely. And the transition into mortgage then, where now the commissions are at a higher stake, right? You're dealing with somebody's full asset of their home.
Yeah.
And going, okay, well, I'm a 22-year-old kid telling this individual, you got to go with this 6.5 or 7% rate because it's best for them. You know, sometimes I would sit back going, what the heck are these people doing listening to me?
Yeah.
But when you're on the phone and you're not meeting somebody face-to-face, you can be anybody you want, right? There was times where I was a 32-year-old husband of two, you know, been married for 10 years, and they don't know that. They don't know who I am. But it's just being confident in what you're doing and making sure that you're delivering what you can provide.
The product.
Yeah.
So the mortgage, we know what happened to that.
Oh boy, 2006 was and into seven. Oh man, that was a heartache. Yeah. Once New Century went under, then it was just the domino effect from there. And that's where I ended up going into, so 2006, I got married to my wonderful wife. Not knowing what the heck I was gonna do. We got married in January. I think by May, June of that year, stuff had hit the fan. So I'm sitting back going, okay, we just bought a house in Mission Viejo. About a 7% rate, you know, 1,100 square foot house at a monthly mortgage of probably $4,500 a month.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind now. So I'm sitting back going, how the heck am I going to pay for this?
Right.
You know, she's working minimal hours, going through her teaching credentials. Her dad, my father-in-law, owns a yacht servicing company that manufactures and sells and installs the cranes that will pick up the dinghy or pick up a Sea-Doo and put it on the bow of the boat.
Yeah.
They did that. I worked with him for a few years. And in the meantime, my old business partner and I were kind of going through this idea of, well, Jeff, you did mortgages. You understand the mortgage aspect. He was currently in this industry and he—
Working for an annuity agency.
Working for a company up in— Insurance agency. Understanding how index annuities work.
Right.
Now, he's telling me how index annuities work at 26 years old.
Right.
I had no idea. It was going in one ear, out the other. It made zero sense to me.
Right.
Foreign language. Now, and I'm talking to him about mortgages on certain things and how they work. That was foreign to him. We came to a point where we just said, look, let's start this company. I'll dial you in. Jeff, and show you how annuities work.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped in, took my test, passed the test, and basically just got thrown to the wolves. And at that time, 2006, 7, 8, it was, what was the market doing? It took an absolute crash.
Tanking. Yeah.
And so,
trial by fire.
Yeah.
You were drinking through a fire hose.
I was. It was crazy. It was scary at the same time. But not only was it scary, it was fun, but it was interesting. And I'm learning a new technique, let's call it, right?
Yeah.
As we're doing that, I'm also still working with my father-in-law and, you know, not sure on what the heck I want to do. You know, at 26, I think most people know exactly what they want to do. But it was an interesting time. Now we progressed into, you know, Shoreline Financial, and here we are today.
Yeah.
And it's having the availability to continue to move forward.
Right.
Right.
But wait, when you started the business, I can remember, you know, it was all through newspaper advertising and that I mean, that is how you founded the business that you have today, right?
Right. Okay.
So you've told me stories about how, you know, you'd post ads X days. This is what the formula was. This is what we were selling. And this is what the marketing and business plan was. Share with that, because I think that's very important. That is a very unique, well, it's a
niche.
It's a niche.
So our whole premise of starting the company was, let's get to the CD type market, right? What are interest rates at a bank paying on a 1 year at that time? Four maybe, mm-hmm. somewhere give or take. We started running some ads on a 1 year fixed annuity at about 3.5% to 4%.
Yeah.
And
running ads in the newspaper?
In the newspaper. So we run it every Sunday.
Okay.
And the first couple Sundays was an absolute disaster. Didn't get anything.
Really?
It was nothing. And I'm not sure what switched. Maybe it's just the repetition of individuals seeing the ad. But I think 3 to 4 weeks in, we came in on a Monday morning. No joke, 40, 50, 60 voicemails that were left on a Sunday and into Monday. It would take us until probably Thursday to return all those calls. And by Friday, we were scheduling as many appointments as we could, and even into Monday and Tuesday the following week. But then it just kept snowballing like that.
Wow.
Where we were just doing appointment after appointment after appointment after appointment.
So ad play Sunday, capture voicemails or not voice, messages.
Messages.
On Monday. Respond to them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, booking appointments.
Thursday, Friday. And even on Saturdays.
End of the weekend, and you'd hit the repeat button again.
Yep. Week after week.
For how long did this happen? And what was happening to the interest rate environment, too, at that time?
It stayed steady for a little bit, and then it started dropping. We were steady like that for, I would say, 3 to 4 years solid.
Just the two of you.
Just the two of us. Now,
off
to the races. We did start hiring some individuals, back office support.
Right.
We ended up opening offices in Chicago, Denver, Arizona. Where else did we have? I think it was those ones for at that point in time.
Okay.
So we did start expanding our horizons and getting out there and hiring new individuals.
Replicating the models.
Replicating the model as best as we could.
Yeah.
But finding that certain areas didn't have that same mentality.
Hmm.
The Midwest was always a little bit different. Midwest was always very, very conservative, which we well know
right. Pretty
much is, and very skeptical about what was going on.
Right.
And this is kind of the avenue where we started to work with our fraternals.
Okay.
Because there's people in... individuals in Chicago area that would work with X, Y, and Z fraternals, and they would ask us, do you work with them? Well, no, we don't. So that's where I started looking into and finding new carriers that were kind of, I don't want to say off the grid, but not your normal A-rated carrier or B++ carrier.
Right,
granted, they were very positive.
It's important we talk a little bit about fraternals. What does that mean? So... there's the State Guarantee Association, that is a kind of a reinsurance entity that the states participate in. So your traditional insurance company would participate with the State Guarantee Association. Fraternal, adversely, number one, doesn't, but they're usually tied to some affiliation, right? Whether that be a religion, right? They're correct. Nonprofit organizations.
So for the most part, they are nonprofit.
Maybe not always, but right. For the most part, they're 501Cs, right?
That is correct.
So in light of that, they get certain advantages, right? Or tax.
Right, they're tax advantages. They're not paying any taxes. So interest rates are typically going to be higher than the normal carrier.
But some of them, you know, albeit off the radar, right? And when I say off the radar, meaning they're just not your traditional insurance household name, but they're community-based.
Yes, think of it as a credit union, right? The credit union type for certain individuals, whether it's a Catholic organization, a women's organization, so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, many credit unions are going to be very local. They're community-based or state-based.
Right.
You know, they're not nationally distributed per se.
Big into local communities. Kind of like I'm sure your grandparents used to go to maybe like an Elks Lodge or some sort of maybe every Sunday or one Sunday a month they would have a spaghetti, mm-hmm. you know, dinner that everybody is invited to. So fraternals, from the research that I've done over the years, are the longest standing depositors in our country's history. I mean, you know that I work with several that are date back to the 1890s.
Right.
And they're still here today.
And financials. What are the financials?
Financials.
Not the numbers, but you keep a pretty good idea on, you know, awareness of the percentages and all of that.
Right.
That you kind of keep a handle on.
I always look at, obviously, first things first, where the assets manage, where right. where how are they?
What's the portfolio general account look like?
Correct.
Yep.
Solvency ratio.
Okay.
RBC ratio, risk-based yeah. capital.
Yep.
I want to make sure that it's an even teeter-totter. Now, with fraternals, they do a lot of either term and whole life, or they do a lot of your fixed short-term annuities. 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 8 year, et cetera, et cetera.
8 year would be probably a max, right?
That's the max. That's the max.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know any other fraternal that does 8 year or higher.
Okay.
I'm sure there's some that do a 10 year, but that's not something.
And foundationally, your company was really founded on like 1 to 3 year products.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part, and that's why we're running those ads. We're running ads at 3.5% on a 1 year fixed annuity. People were calling in left and right. We years later we went back and did some research on the dollar amounts that we're doing. In year one, we did $45 million
of deposits,
and 90% of that was 1 year business.
Wow.
Now you look at the residuals. I guess, so to speak, but it's after that 12 month is up, 98% of the individuals would renew it for another year, or they would see what your 3 year is or a 5 year. So really the first 5, 6, 7 years of the business was just rolling that, you know, snowballing those 1 year, snowballing a 3 year, snowballing a 5 year, year after year after year after year.
But still maintaining the same level of advertisement, continuing to gather assets and build this annuity book.
Right. We found that having our niche was the CD market, right? We're not going to go get somebody's 401k, put it into a 10-year fixed index annuity and wipe our hands and say, see you later. We're not going to talk to you for 10 more years. We found that was just not the model that we wanted. And we found with the niche of the CD market, it's everybody has liquid cash somewhere, whether yeah. it's 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, and they have it spread out between 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 banks or credit unions.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that time too, is you think about, so when this was really hitting your level in your practice where we're beyond survival and we are at a level of significance, we're operating as a business, we're sustainable. Was that 8, 7, 8, 9? I mean, how long did it take you guys to kind of say, okay, you know, here we are? I know the phone was ringing off the hook, but you were just literally operating out of a fire hose.
Honestly, probably about 6, 7 years.
Okay. So it took some time.
It took some time. And this is where, you know me as a father, where I am constantly doing stuff with kids sports, and I probably jumped a little ahead in your thing here, but and we can track back. But I think for the first 6-7 years of my kids being born, I wasn't there a lot, right? I'm working. We're working 6 days a week, and into the late hours of the night. And this is I'm traveling back to Pennsylvania. I'm traveling to our office in Chicago, to Denver, Arizona, Nevada. So a lot of traveling. So now, as you well know, I mean, I love going to my kids' sports. I love coaching. I love doing all that stuff.
Yeah, but the hard work has provided you that opportunity, you know.
It has. And this is where, you know, going into, you know, this whole the last year of COVID.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was one hell of a 12-month period. But this is where I think as a father, as a business owner, as a husband, I don't want to say scaled back, but it's understanding what's important in our world. And I think the ongoing joke for some of you guys in this room is that, oh, look, it's 11:30. There's goes Jeff driving by. Hey, oh, no office work today.
He goes running another 8 miles.
Or out running or working out. Yeah. I was doing the grind for a long, long time. And we all do.
Yeah.
You know, but working from construction back at 14, working all through high school, out of high school, not going to college, and jumping straight into the workforce. I mean, there's a good solid 20 plus years of constant work.
Right.
Day in, day out. And this last year was telling you, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. It was great to
Should
get
I
home.
Be a little easier on you? Is that what you're asking of
no,
me?
No, not at all. No, okay, I love good, it. Good. Come just on. Keep it going.
I will not change my ways.
Good. I hope you don't.
Good.
So it's been fun.
Glad
it's,
we got that settled.
But now I'm getting to the point, and we're having a conversation earlier. It's like, okay, I want to figure out some more marketing techniques. I want to do this. I want to do that.
Yeah. And we'll get to that.
We will.
Yeah.
Once again, I jumped ahead, but
no, that's okay. So it is important, I think, to acknowledge that one of the things that not only just Americans, but in the world, COVID has done is that's really made them pause and think, you know, what is important to me? How do I rewrite this script? Because clearly the world has rewritten the script externally for us. And we choose to either comply or adapt how we feel best fit, you know? Right. And for everybody, that's a little bit different. What I would challenge everybody to do is to just think about outside the box and to try not to conform and be an independent thinker and all of that, you know? My point, I guess, in all of that is that you've certainly made some pretty monumental decisions in your life the last year, and you're, you know, clearly living proof of that, right? With things that you're deciding to do and how you've handled the last year.
Correct. Are we getting into the moving? Is that where you're
no, I no? wasn't.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
You can.
Well, I mean, you know, you did mention beautiful Ladera Ranch.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we are moving out of state. We are moving out to Idaho just to get a different feel of life. And, you know, you only live once. You might as well make the best of it. And
yeah, but you're also an outdoorsy person, right?
We are.
Yeah.
We are. We love camping. We love our outdoors. We love fishing. Motorcycle riding, just like you and the boys. So it's finding fishing, a new
hunting,
avenue.
Loving every day.
Amen.
That's right. All right. So we'll come back to family and all of that. But I do want to circle back to the business. And clearly, how you exist and operate today, 2018-19, pre-COVID, was dramatically different from how Shoreline Financial was established as a company through newspaper advertising. Certainly the activity of phone response and, you know, being just very response-oriented. Great idea, well implemented, played out, hard work, it delivered, established a really good business, right? But as the years have gone on, we've seen a suppression of interest rates, you know, newspaper. Let's talk a little bit about that. I imagine it hasn't been that way for the existence since 2006.
Right. As you well know, a newspaper is a dying breed. I mean, we see newspapers across the country that are closing up shop left and right, being bought out. You know, they're being consolidated here and there.
But you still use newspaper,
we
correct?
Do. We do. We do. And it's not bringing in the realm of business that we had back in 6, 7, 8, 9, but it's still bringing in people in the door. And once again, in this niche market of CDs, somebody that doesn't want a 5, 8, 10 year fixed index annuity or even a fixed annuity at that point, maybe they just want a 1 year. Maybe they want a 1 year at 1.5, 1.75, or 2%, depending on where we can find it in the state. Okay, we will sell it. We'll give you that product. That's what you come here to get. So, but some of my favorite clients are the ones that came in the front door and said, look, $10,000. That's all I'm going to give you. I don't know who you are from Adam and Eve, and this is what I feel comfortable with. Fantastic. On a 1 year product, yeah. $10,000, making next to nothing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what I built the business on is behind that $10,000, there's a heck of a lot more money. And it's baby steps. It's taking these, okay, let's do this year. Next year, maybe you add a little bit more. 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, you add a little bit more. Oh, hey, Jeff, I had a 5 year annuity that, or a 5 year CD or a 5 year annuity that just came due. What are your rates? Oh, here's our rates. Okay, well, I'll transfer this $100,000, $200,000. So over the years, this is where that $10,000 client now has turned into $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 client. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're looking at retiring soon or already have retired and they got this 401k sitting out there. So it's just the snowball effect of taking care of the client now for the future benefit that they're going to take care of you.
Yeah. Right? You know, that's such an interesting insight because – and so underappreciated in just insurance and financial planning services at large. So the saying I've been using a lot with my boys that I learned this last year was, you know, the question is, how do you eat an elephant? The answer is one bite at a time. Right. And I've been trying to get my boys to understand that because they're setting a goal and it's like, I can't do that. Well, you know, let's take a step back. All too often in our space, it's, what's the approach? I'm going to uncover all the assets and I want to try to put a plan in place that allows me to immediately win over all the assets, as opposed to that one bite at a time approach where since 2006, here you are today, right? You have, you know, over 500 million in policies or the equivalent would be active
policies.
Dollars in management, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful place to be. And X number of that is in, you know, still 1 year and 3 year and,
or a matured business that has been sitting there. And if somebody's 90 years old and you know, some of these old policies, they had a 3% minimum rate of return. Why take that away from them?
Right.
Right. They, God forbid something were to happen to them, their son, daughter, grandchild, whomever it may be, is going to come to me, and I've had it happen multiple times. Jeff, we're going to leave the funds with you. You showed mom and dad, you showed grandma and grandpa the avenue, and they absolutely love you, and they love the product and or the companies that you represent. That's fantastic. I love getting those phone calls.
So that's a very, very interesting point you made because, again, that's another, I think, somewhat forgotten space in the financial planning world, if you will, and that, you know, the question we would ask everybody is how involved or what processes do you have in place that engage you to the second generation of the clients you're currently managing? So what is it that you do? Because I know you're very active in doing cards, you know, pre-COVID doing events. You do things that constantly engage and touch your clients. But what is it also that you're doing to include the kids?
Not only repetition. I think repetition is wonderful. But what I always do is I always get the beneficiary's email address. We put it into our Salesforce system. We generate emails through MailChimp. And we constantly send out email reminders, interest rate updates, probably once every 2 weeks, maybe once a month, just depending on what's happening in the economy. One thing that I absolutely enjoy doing and what I've done since day one is that when the contract comes in, we make a cover letter. We put our information on it. We put the policy information on it. Because you've fingered through some of these contracts. Mm-hmm. You can go through five or six pages and you're like, what the heck do I have? This right. makes zero sense
just
to
me. Legalese.
Right. So we put together a cover letter.
Yeah.
I have a picture of my family on it. I sign every single letterhead that we put on there. And I always put a note. Hey, Scott, thank you for the opportunity to work with you. Greatly appreciate it. You know, can't wait to talk to you again. A handwritten letter on every single cover letter.
That's your personal touch.
That's a personal touch. Yeah. Now, hey, it could go in one ear and out the other, and some people might like it. Some people might not even see it. Another thing we do is every contract that comes in, you know, it's always going to come in with this, the carrier folder. I will use our personal folders. So I have Shoreline Financial folders that have been made up. It's got our phone number on it. It's got our email address, our website on the front cover. When you open that up, it's got all the different products that we work with. You know, I work with certain CPAs. I work with certain trust attorneys. We've got all that information on there. Long-term care, term life, whole life, index, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything.
All the products.
Staple my business card in there. So there's multiple pages, multiple looks of name recognition, phone number, email address, website on every single page. Now, I've had individuals, I've had beneficiaries that call me up and say, look, I don't know what this is, but your name is written all over it. You know, mom, dad died. I'm going through my stuff. Help us out. Mm-hmm. That's, I think for the initial, that's what we put out.
Yeah.
once again, I'm touching base with my clients multiple times per quarter. I don't want to do it too much where it's too much. I mean, what is too much? Well, if you're doing it once a week, I think that's going to be too much.
But yeah, but define the medium at which you're engaging with them. We're not talking just phone. We're not talking phone calls. We're talking
mailers. Yeah. I'll send out a postcard with updated rates once a quarter. Every Christmas, send out a family picture. What I get a kick, and I just got it today. Jeff, I've been a client of yours for 10 years. I have every single one of your Christmas cards in a folder.
Barf.
Well, just kidding. It is, I mean, maybe a little totally stocky-ish, kidding. But it is kind of interesting. And they'll say, look, I can't believe your kids have grown up, you know, and we've known each other for
you
all
know,
these
funny.
Years.
Over the 10 fantastic. Years, your hairline has not changed.
It is. Look at that. That is beautiful.
More freckles. Yeah.
But
anywho,
you know.
That's pretty cool. No. That's a validation. I mean, I kid, but that's a validation of that you're doing a good thing for these people. And obviously, you know, you hold a place in their
right.
in their mind and in their heart from a protection standpoint. That's what you're
right. And I think the family photo, besides just a regular card that you know sign your name or individuals in the office, is a little more. It's a personal touch.
Yeah.
Now I like Jason Labrum. I listened to that podcast. You did a wonderful job, by the way, Scott. Good job.
Thank you.
I love his pie thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
That's a fun idea, yes.
It's exactly. completely different. You know,
but that's his personal touch.
Right.
That's the advice I always like to learn is you need to, what is your corporate identity going to be? You need to pick a lane. And just because you have a corporate identity today, you choose it, doesn't mean it's not going to adapt and evolve over time. It will. It should probably. But also, what personal touches and experiences do you want to instill in your culture and in your environment and share that with your clients? Well, you've clearly done that.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest touches for a client that I do is I will set aside every week 5 to 10 clients that I will personally pick up the phone and call. If I haven't talked to them in years because now they're making the rotation, it's still picking up the phone. Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, how you doing? It's mm-hmm. Jeff at Shoreline. You know, so glad to thank you. How you doing?
Yeah.
How's it going? How's the last 12 months of COVID, how's that treating you? Blah, 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 blah. You know, it's making the small talk. You know, they don't want to talk. Not everybody wants to talk about their finances.
Yeah.
And a lot of my clientele, as you are aware, are 55 and older, looking at retiring and or retired. You get in contact with somebody that's been retired and it's been sitting on the couch for the last 12 months from COVID, they will talk your ear off. But that's another touch of of just reaching out to them. They might not even get that from their own kids or family members. Mm-hmm. But
that's a very real thing.
It is. And it's sad. I mean, you see it with your meals on wheels. I mean, it's incredible that the older generation sometimes gets bypassed.
Yeah.
Right. It's, oh, you know,
they're forgotten.
They're at home. They're okay. They're watching Matlock or doing a crossword puzzle. Right. No, they're sitting there saying, I want to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And to pick up the phone and, you know, let them ramble on about something for 20 minutes, a half hour. Okay, that might be my phone call for the day because I took up some time. But once again, it's a touch.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a touch.
And absolutely.
I've gotten
how phone much of your client base today would you say is 70 plus? Is it half? You know, you do work with an older client base, and I think that again, that's another niche that they've.
I would say 70%.
Okay, so the overwhelming majority are going to be 70 plus. Are fixed annuities and short duration products dead?
No.
Explain.
Once again, this is the niche. Every advisor, I've done it in my practice. It's that you bypass the small dollar amounts to get to the big jumbo CDs or to get to the IRA or 401k. Why? Because that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
Well,
what's sitting in banks CDs today? 13 trillion. Look this. Can you search that? Danielle will confirm that. But it's, I think last number was like $13 trillion sitting in banks. And what's the overwhelming sales force try to do, convince these people to do?
Long-term.
In the annuity world.
Long-term. 10 years.
7 to 10 year annuities.
Right. Oh, you get a bonus.
Right.
You get a 5% or 8% bonus. Oh, and guess what? We're going to sell you an income rider attached to it. Oh, you're making 6%. Well, no, that's not the reality of it. And, you know, that's where we've had conversations years and years ago. You know, what is the bread and butter? A client's bread and butter is anywhere between 5 and 8 years when it comes to interest rates, right? It also, what I take a look at is, where are you at health-wise? Where is your spouse out health-wise? Do you have any kids that maybe potentially have a disability? What else is out there besides money? I'm not always out there digging to find that next dollar bill. Because you ask the right questions, they're going to tell you exactly where their assets are at. They're going to tell you how much they have. They're going to tell you what product, what length of term they want. So it's just sitting back asking the question. You know, I think one of my go-to questions is when I meet a client for the first time is, tell me what you're looking at accomplishing. Now, it sounds super easy. It's an easy question. But 90% of the time, they will sit there and regurgitate what they want.
What's on their mind.
And a lot of advisors will take that and go, okay, they have all this money. I'm going to try to wrap this up. I'm going to do a retirement analyzer or something along the lines. And I'm going to show them how I can make all their money work for them.
Right.
That's not what they told you. They told you right now they've got 10,000. Work with the 10,000. They told you 50,000 or 100,000, whatever it may be. That's what they want to work with now. Take it and run.
Yeah. Make them a client.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the old saying? One in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Right. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Good. Thanks, Scott. Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay. So the other conversation, I think, is that funny too?
It was. I got a good little chuckle out of that.
So as you look at your practice today in client, new clients, not existing clients, but new clients that are walking in the door, how has it changed? What do they look like today? What are their concerns today? I mean, you've got interest rates at, you know, near zero. Obviously, you're not getting 3.5% guaranteed for 1 year.
No more.
You know, so what does the current landscape look like? Which is why I ask, are, you know, 1 and 3 year fixed annuities dead? Clearly, your answer is no. You know, many advisors would be shocked to hear that, right?
Right. Well, you ask any individual out there that, let's say, is 65 and older. You've got X amount of dollars at Wells Fargo. What are they paying? Less than 0.25%, if that.
Right.
Okay. So if I can show you a 1 year at 1.25 or 1.5, does that sound better than your 0.25% at Wells Fargo? Well, yeah, but you can't do that. Well, yes, I can. Here's an insurance company right here that has this one-year MIGA, one-year fixed annuity. Well, how can they do that? Well,
you explain and go.
Yeah, you explain it, right?
General account, yeah, yeah.
So, is the short-term annuity world dead? No, it's not, and it's still thriving. It's just finding those individuals. Now, we still run ads in the paper. We still send out mailers. I've bought in over the years
because lists. Over the years you have okay. So, yeah, like your CRM list consists of. How many, I mean, names? What I mean, it's got to be thousands and thousands.
With right? Over the years, a buying list, there's actually a gentleman in my office that I can go to and say, here's the demographic, here's the age, here's the annual income, assets, blah, 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 blah. He'll
all the criteria.
Yep. He'll give me a list, all the data in an Excel spreadsheet. I can upload it to my Salesforce. Boom, send out mailers whenever you want. I probably have nearly 75 to 80,000 names in my Salesforce.
That you'll send this out to. And so you basically
quarter.
What you've done is you've procured electronically your own newspaper publication.
Correct. Once a quarter, not only will we send out a mailer to our existing clients, we will also send it out to 5,000 to 10,000 new clients that we've gotten off of these a mailing list. Hmm. Now, we've all done this before. Some, you get a certain percentage back.
Of right? course.
Wrong address, or they moved, or whatever it may be. Yeah. But then, look, all you're looking for is 5 to 10 people calling.
Right.
Right? Because if you get a couple $100,000 into a 5-year, it's going to pay not only for the marketing,
right,
but it's going to pay for overhead expense.
Yeah, it's future quality, client. Right. Yeah.
And they're always going to be there. Now, I've had it where I've mailed it out before, haven't mailed them in years. And they still hold on to that mailer. And they'll call me up and say, hey, I've got this 1 year that you had either in the paper or in a mailer at 2.5%. I want that. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. Right. If you look at the date, it's 3 years ago or whatever it may
be. That's amazing.
So, people hold on to this stuff.
Yeah.
That's
a long game. Obviously you guys struck the right, let's call it luck and timing and all that out of the gate. In 06 and how you guys were started and all that. I mean, you hit struck gold, but today you've played in the long game. You've stuck to the plan. As you look forward, what changes do you foresee in that space that you're dealing in?
Interest rate market is always going to fluctuate. It's always up and down, right? Now it's finding individuals. Now, hopefully we can get back to running seminars at restaurants or libraries or multipurpose rooms soon. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping by the end of the year, that'd be fantastic. But in the meantime, it's still running ads in the paper. It's still sending out mailers. It's still picking up the phone and calling past clients.
Yeah. What about the internet, social media, things like that?
So and we were talking earlier. So that's what I want to get into a little bit more now that, things are kind of hopefully coming back to normal here and reaching out and putting another spoke in that marketing wheel, so to speak, and maybe start doing some SEO, maybe start doing more social media, finding different avenues for the niche CD market.
Yeah, but it's still exactly. So you're still going to be laser focused in your business because that's who you are. That is your brand. Not that you don't do other things. You do. But that is the core of your business, right? And so
absolutely.
How do you kind of take that model from paper to the digital world? Yep. That's a very good question, right?
Yeah. I don't know. And that's the conversation we were having earlier. Yeah. And, what percentage of individuals 65 and older or 75 and older are going to the internet? Some of them are, some of them aren't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a growing number with no question.
Right.
How do you access those people for the information that specifically you're looking to advertise, right?
Yes. That's the next question. I don't know. I need to do more research on that. And that's where, talking with individuals such as yourself or, other advisors that are in our circle and really trying to hone down on what is going to be, what's working for you guys? What's working out there? It's maybe collaborating and working together. Oh, you do a lot of term business. Let's maybe advertise your clients and maybe we can do something along the lines of the CD type annuity business.
Yeah.
So just collaboration and working together and bouncing ideas off each other.
So with your practice and where it's at today, certainly maintaining the client relationships that you do have, which is, I mean, how it's hundreds.
Hundreds.
Thousands. Hundreds.
Yeah.
Thousands of clients. And continuing to acquire new clients, offer additional supports and serve planning to them, life insurance planning, long-term care planning, income planning, maybe, and even in many cases, you're talking about, you're dealing with the second generation of money now, right?
Correct.
And you're very involved with, you know, the community, your kids' lives. What does your schedule look like? How do you manage your time?
If anybody knows me, they know I love Mondays. Absolutely. Mondays to me, it's
a... Don't even ask if we go home on a vacation on Monday. We all have to go home Sunday.
You have to go home Sunday morning.
I hate
you
got
to get prepped for Monday morning. It's fantastic. It's a new slate. Why not?
Understand.
You get to wake up Monday morning.
You're not
energized.
Wrong. You're not wrong.
Every day is a new day. And in this industry, I think Mondays is going to set the precedent of how the week is going to go.
See, I also think, too, you programmed yourself from 06 in the beginning because that was the day after the Sunday paper.
Yep. You're right. You're right. So, I mean, a typical Monday morning is I'm in the office.
The phone's not going to ring anymore on Monday, so let's just stay
it's
on
not,
a vacation.
But I know, but it's getting in there, getting my paperwork done. Getting,
I get it. So Monday is the most important day of the week.
It is. Okay. It is.
And you have your little routine on Monday, right?
Mondays are phone calls, emails, paperwork.
Okay.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are appointments.
Okay.
Friday, well, Friday might be a little golf or
it's
fun time. It's
you time.
My wife and I love to go out to lunch on Fridays. So if I've got the opportunity to take her out to lunch and spend some quality time with her, I'm going to do it.
And you're involved, you're coaching with your kids, and you haven't put on any weight, so you're maintaining some level.
Bikini season's right around the corner. I gotta
maintain. You have your workout time, your workout routine. Fitness is very important for you.
You really want to know my
a little bit. Yeah,
okay. I mean, okay. So look, I'm in the office in the morning. I'm typically leaving by 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay. I come home, work out for an hour, hour and a half, depending on what's going on.
Yep.
In the meantime, if somebody's called, it goes to my voicemail on my cell. I will then make phone calls for the next hour or two, depending on how things go.
Yep.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, I coach my daughter in softball.
Intense.
No, it's outdoors.
Meaning she's gotten
I got
to a level. That's involved.
It is.
Good
but
you.
You know what? Once again, for the first 5-6 years of you know, the kids' life, it was not, I wasn't there all the time. I didn't go to, Lindsay took them to Disneyland. She took them to swim lessons. She took them to a gymboree, whatever it's called.
Yep.
I didn't get to do any of that stuff. So
right.
Now it's my time to get out there and coach. I love coaching. It's fun. And I know sometimes you're calling me saying, hey, let's go do something. It's like, well, sorry, I got batting practice or we got a game or we got practice or we got something going on.
Right.
But it's fun.
But that's good.
We enjoy it.
You know, you're committed to it and having your kids involved and you being involved is being a more, you know, intentional dad. And I would argue many should do more of that.
I listened to your Daddy Saturday podcast.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. I thought he had a lot of wonderful things to say. And at the end of the day, being a dad, a parent in general, is probably one of the most difficult and yet rewarding occupation that's out there.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, there's sometimes you want to strangle your kid's neck because they did something, but at the same time, they can do that and you can laugh. Or they come out and they, you know, my son, he's always saying something quirky. It's having fun times, it's having bad times, it's having up and downs.
That's all the kids are challenging.
That's being a father.
Way. Absolutely. And that's what I can really appreciate about, you know, Justin Badd and his mission is that think about how many fathers really sit down to think, okay, where am I really at in me being a father and what areas can I improve upon, you know, or how can I be better? And really, really asking yourself, how can I be more intentional as a father? Be present, be involved, learning how to respond to certain things. For me, that's been a big thing, is learning how to be a better responder and have a better tone with James, as an example, right. You know, and that's a learn. I mean, you have to be very deliberate. You have to really, it's a learning process. So if you don't recognize that, how do you expect that behavior to change?
Right.
It just won't.
Right. And we've hung out multiple times over the years. And once again, they, you know, our kids call each other uncle and cousins and so on and so forth. And it's, I forgot where I was going to go with that, but having that dynamic with your child is phenomenal.
And it's a journey.
It is a journey.
And it changes. It changes as they change, and they are rapidly changing.
Every day.
Yeah.
A funny little story. Weston came downstairs the other day, big smile on his face. I mean, he just thought of the most funniest thing or created something, and he was the golden god. He came down, kind of bent his head down, points at his hairline. He parted his hair in the middle.
And thought it was the greatest
thing. He thought he just invented a new hairdo. But to see the smile on his face, right. And I mean, Lindsay and I just started busting up laughing because it was like he created something out of nothing. But your hair is there.
Yeah.
He had a normal hairline, and he just wanted to part it. And now he's been going to school the last couple of days with parted hair.
You're kidding me.
I swear. And the kid loves it.
You're not going to get in his way?
No. I mean, look, I don't have any hair, so more power to him, man. If he could part it, he could comb it forward, backwards, who cares?
That's great.
Rock it, man.
That is great. You've got the work-life balance figured out. Good for you.
It's always a work in progress.
Yeah. Chapters. There are chapters in life. And if COVID has taught us anything, what a chapter it's been, you know?
Very interesting chapter.
Yeah.
But I think it's in this day and age, family, friends is a very, very important aspect to have.
Absolutely. My good friend, thank you for coming in, sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely. Greatly appreciate it. Hugs and kisses.
Till next time.
Till next time.